Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Wednesday, April the 4th, 2018, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, your second daily dose of happy for the day. And I am happy to announce that progress is being made on the book. I have completed the first round of editing. After all this effort, we finally got to the first round being done. And I'm in the process now of putting the book together, actually, you know, piecing the chapters together. So this is exciting.
It is very exciting.
We're getting really, really close to that launch date. So, that's my big news for the day. That's what I've been working on all day. I have nothing else to report. That's it. Okay, show's over.
That's a big thing to report. I mean, it's fun to work on a project and be really immersed in it. And know that you've accomplished something at the end of it. So Well done and good for you and yay for all of us.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because a lot of people have put effort into this thing. I mean, we're looking at 55 stories from, I think, 40 authors. I haven't counted them lately, but I think it's 40. And I mean, when you get that many people with that many minds and that many sets of experience putting their efforts together, their best efforts together, it's mind blowing. It's just mind blowing what these stories look like. They're great. So it's going to be good stuff, really good stuff. How you doing? How's your day been going?
You know, I feel like I've had an exceptionally good day.
Oh.
And what makes it good is that I have been in, I've been aware that I'm aligned to source energy, also known as my inner being. Things just have synchronistically popped up in my world. It's like I have, you know, inbox, things would come into my inbox, I'd respond to them, and then I need to walk away. And when I was away for 15 minutes, like while I came back, there was nothing like earth shattering happened while I was gone. And I just had lots of stops and starts today. And there was just perfect synchronicity in everything. And it just felt like a nice flow. And normally today is considered the last day of our booking process for all the transactions that happened in March.
Oh.
And I was expecting it to be a huge, heavy flow day. And instead, it wasn't. I think the flow is going to happen tonight.
Ah.
That's okay. And then I'll finish those in the morning. But I was kind of like armed and ready for Armageddon, you know, because it's quarter end. It's a big time. And I knew I had a whole bunch of personal things I had to accomplish in addition to my work related things. And so it was so cool because all my personal things got done with ease because the work day didn't go the way I had originally expected. It went better than planned. So that's the kind of synchronicity that I so enjoy being a part of when I'm not pushing against anything and I'm just letting things just happen, you know. Law of Attraction just orchestrates things on my behalf so beautifully that it's fun to be me.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's great when you get in that flow. That flow just feels so good, so easy. And in fact, during this morning's show, I actually made a commitment on the air to Cindy and to the listeners that I was going to start doing much more segment intending today because I wanted to really make that a part of my habitual way of doing the day. In the past, I've been really bad at, you know, just missing it almost all day long, maybe doing it once and that was it. Well, I actually did it like 3 or 4 times today. I didn't catch all of them, but I caught a large portion of them and did it. And I think it actually helped the day because things went very, very smoothly. I moved right along.
I'm assuming a lot of people don't know what segment intending is. So can you describe it?
That's probably a good idea, isn't it? Yeah. Segment intending is a concept that Abraham presented. I think they put it in this book, actually, toward the end of the book. But the gist of it is that you break your day down into segments, and each segment is like a key thing or a key piece of your day. So, for instance, if you have a part of your day where, say you're just going to do the laundry, right? So as you get ready to do the laundry, before you even do anything, you get yourself into a good vibrational alignment, get yourself feeling good, and then you start doing the laundry. And then after you're done doing the laundry, the next thing to come up, whatever that is, maybe it's, I don't know, going to make the dinner or something. So before you go to make the dinner, again, you get yourself into vibrational alignment, you get yourself feeling good, and you go to make the dinner. And when you go through a day like that, supposedly your day gets smoother, your ability to attract things improves, everything gets better and better. So I figured it's about time I started doing some segment intending. I mean, it's been so long, I should.
I don't think I consciously do segment intending anymore, but I know I used to be very intentional, not like my whole day, But when there were specific things that maybe I felt a little wonky, or just the energy wasn't something where I did every day, it wasn't an autopilot thing. Let's say I was doing a special presentation while I was driving to work, you know, I would spend time, you know, just kind of getting into a good place and setting the intention for here's what I'm looking to happen. And, you know, I feel comfortable as I walk into the room and people greet me and I smile and they smile back. And the energy of that just kind of stirs me in a way that it feels good. Anyway, almost, I would say almost every time I did that, the outcome of that segment ended up being exactly like I had set the intention for.
So it really does work in your experience in a big way.
Oh, absolutely. And today I would say, because I practice that, quote, manually. I'm like, okay, now I'm going to do this thing. I did that for a while until that practice became kind of second nature for me. And now oftentimes I'll go into something without doing that because I already sense that my energy is in a really great place. But where I use it the most now is where I'm going into something, whether it's a phone call, a meeting with someone, or, you know, just I'm going from one segment of my day to another, like you said, you know, like going from the grocery store to coming home and cooking dinner or whatever. If I notice I'm feeling a little aggravated, or, you know, just kind of something's under my skin and I don't feel great, then I will purposefully stop what I'm doing and go, you know, I don't like how I feel. I need to make some adjustments. And so I make some internal adjustments, and then I walk into my next segment, and oh my gosh, what a positive difference that makes.
And we should probably also talk about those adjustments. What do you do? I mean, do you have any particular little technique you use, or how do you make the adjustment?
Well, I guess, like, if I'm not, so like what you're talking about, you're not starting from a negative space. You're
True.
Just going into something new, and you're kind of like giving yourself some positive affirmations or well-being thoughts.
Well, hopefully, yeah. I mean, sometimes it's very possible that I can be in a negative space. Something went wrong, and, you know, for a moment my energy level dipped, and now I got to get myself back. So in that case, I would be in a negative space, and I want to get back quickly.
So if I'm in a negative place and I know I want to pivot and move towards a more positive place, you know, I stop and I recognize and acknowledge where I am. And I say, you know what, where I am is where I am, and it's okay. The world did not fall off its axis. My life did not come into like some desperate place. I'm okay. I just don't feel great right now. And you know what? That's okay. That's an indicator of something where I'm not aligned to my inner being. And so I want to feel better. And I start talking about, I want to feel better because it feels good to feel better. Now, I'm just making this one up.
Sure.
This is the type of thing I might do. And sometimes just, I really want to feel better is enough to move the needle. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes I go, you know what, this is feeling rough. I think I need to just, like do something to distract from the environment I'm in where the is kind of playing out.
Another one of our technical terms.
Maybe I walk outside. Or, you know, maybe I just go to another room and just sit and close my eyes for a few moments. You know, maybe I call a friend, you know, phone a friend, because I really would love some help in making an adjustment to how I'm feeling. Sometimes I'll go watch a television show for 30 minutes. There's all sorts of different things I do, but whatever it is that I do, I always start with, this is where I am and it's okay. And what I want is to feel better. And so I wonder what I can do now to feel better. And then I fill in the gap with, or fill in the space with all the millions of different options that come to me.
So it's basically an incremental process. You start with where you are and then you just kind of very slowly move your way until you get to the place you want to be.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about it, that's exactly what Abraham does when they do a rampage.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, or if they want to help somebody tell a better story, they always start with where they are.
Right.
And then incrementally, each sentence kind of gets into a better state of mind, state of being, state of feeling, until they get to a point that they're flying high.
So it really does work then. This incremental approach, it really does work. I mean, you do it now hardly without even thinking about it. It's nice to know that I can get to that point where I'm not even thinking about it. No, I'm serious. That's a good thing.
Well, yeah. And the nice thing is when you do it over and over, it's like, I know that our physical body has like cell memory, mm-hmm. but I'm assuming that there's something also with the mind and whatever that like, because the mind is able to create autopilot really fast. So it's like somehow when you've been doing something and practicing it for a long time, something goes autopilot and you kind of go from 0 to 60 in almost no time at all.
Mm-hmm.
Where once upon a time when you started, it's more of a manual process. And I love autopilot. Love it, love it, love it.
Well, it certainly is easier, isn't it? When you don't have to actually think about it, it's just kind of part of your being. You don't have to work it. It just happens, sort of.
Well, and I will say on the caveat is autopilot always also works doing something that does not serve you. So I don't love that one.
Yeah, that's not so good.
I love the autopilot for things that do serve me.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely don't want to get that kind of autopilot going. Well, actually, probably most of us had that autopilot going when we first discovered Law of Attraction, because that's what we're taught to do, right? We're taught to get into the negative mode and stay there and build it up. So we probably did that autopilot really, really well for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we are... Oh, I'm sorry, did you have more?
Let's move forward.
Yeah, I was just going to say we have been working on the book, The Law of Attraction, The Basics of the Teachings of Abraham, and we're actually making really good progress. We're about halfway through the book. We're in part 3, and we are up to the subsection entitled Thoughts Evoking Great Emotion Manifest Quickly, which is it's a way of answering a question that I know was one of my early questions. What does it take to make stuff manifest? But more importantly, how long is it going to take? Well, turns out there's actually a clue that tells mm-hmm. us pretty accurately how long it's going to take.
Right, because it really does depend on how much intensity you put towards your thinking on the subject.
So should I read it, or do you want to read today?
You can read.
Okay. So it says here, we have told you that your thoughts are magnetic, but we want to add a point of clarification here. Although every thought has creative potential, the thoughts that do not bring great emotion with them are not bringing the subject of your thought into your experience with any sort of speed. When it comes to thoughts that you feel strong emotion about, whether it is a positive emotion or a negative emotion, the essence of those thoughts is being quickly manifested into your physical experience. And that emotion that you are feeling is communication from your inner being, letting you know that you are now accessing the power of the universe. If you go to a horror movie, and as you are sitting there in the theater with a friend, looking at the screen and all of the frightening detail that is being offered with the color and the sound, you are, at that time, in a negative workshop. For as you are envisioning all that you do not want to see, the emotion that you are feeling is your inner being saying to you, you are seeing something that is so vivid that the universe is now offering power unto it. But when you leave the theater, fortunately, you usually say, well, it was only a movie. So you do not expect it. You do not believe it will happen to you. So you do not complete the second part of the equation. You have given thought to it with emotion, so you have created, but you do not allow it into your experience because you do not really expect it. However, as you are walking out of the theater, if your friend says to you, well, it may be only a movie, but it once happened to me, and then you may begin pondering that thought, and in doing so, you may bring yourself to the belief or expectation that that could also happen to you, and then it will. Giving thought on the one hand and expecting or believing on the other hand is the balance that brings to you that which you receive. Now, as I'm reading this, I can just hear like that little voice, you know, tapping me on the shoulder saying, well, okay, so if I go to see a horror movie and my friend and I talk about afterward that, you know, that actually happened to me or that actually happened to my friend, then I'm going to have like Jack the Ripper come after me? Is that really what they're saying?
Maybe not Jack the Ripper, but it is saying that you are giving thought and attention with your emotion, and you are broadcasting fearful ideas and fearful thoughts. So whatever you're talking about, yeah, you're bringing that toward you.
Probably not the best idea then. Unless we like that kind of thing.
Well, but see, that's where, you know, having never been trained, we do all sorts of nilly-willy things with our thinking. And we don't always recognize, like, oh, wow, just having this conversation, thinking it's like a no big deal conversation could actually negatively impact you.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, I used to listen to television, and I had a TV years and years ago that didn't have a timer. And so I would leave the TV on a news station, because years ago when television wasn't 24/7, the only thing that was on late at night was a news station.
Mm-hmm.
And it pretty much just kept broadcasting the same, you know, topics over and over and over.
Oof.
And, you know, there were many times that I'd wake up the next morning not in a very good mood.
I wonder why.
And I kept, yeah. And I thought, well, I got 8 hours of sleep. Well, yeah, I got 8 hours of hearing some really wretched things that were going on in different parts of the country and different parts of the world. And wow, what a difference when I stopped that practice.
Yeah.
And I started turning the TV off before I went to bed.
Well, I can
totally
attest to that.
Totally different waking up in the morning.
Yeah. Oh, I can attest to that too, because I gave up. I kind of followed Joel's lead on this, but starting, I guess it was 2 summers ago, he told me that he'd given up on watching and listening to the news, and I completely stopped for a while. I actually now kind of peek every once in a while because there are certain things I want to look at, but I don't inundate myself like I used to. I don't have that, you know, that TV playing in the background playing the news. That's like the worst thing. Couldn't possibly do that anymore. About the most I'll ever do is I'll do a scan of the Google News headlines for just certain things and then close the page. I won't be there more than a minute or two. I just won't do it to myself. Mm-hmm. But you're right. When you get rid of that, that's one of the best ways to get rid of not just the internal negative self-talk, but the external negative self-talk, the mm-hmm. external negative talk that comes at you. Because that's exactly what that is. It's all negative. There's no such thing as happy news. Why is that?
Well, you know, it's such a commonplace thing. I find this mostly at family gatherings, for me, at family gatherings. And the reason I say that is because I'm one of the few people in my family that follow law of attraction. The rest of my family is living life a little bit more by default.
Mm-hmm.
And my friends are much more deliberate creators like I am.
Mm-hmm.
So when
mm-hmm.
I go to a family function and I'm just kind of listening in on conversation, because, you know, big families, they end up with like little pockets of conversation, one at the kitchen table, one around the coffee table, one in, you know, another room, blah, blah, blah. And so sometimes I bounce around from conversation to conversation. And I'll walk in on something and, you know, one family member might be talking about something that happened, you know, at their job. And then somebody else at that, you know, within the family goes, oh my gosh, I had something like that happen too. And before you know it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people all have stories of either something that has happened to themselves of that same negative nature, or they borrow stories from people that they knew that had something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're
mm-hmm.
like all adding to the pool of these really negative stories. And so I bounce out of that conversation and I go somewhere else. Because I am aware that if you give a lot of thought and attention to those conversations, to the point that maybe when you leave, you're still thinking about it. And now maybe you get a little concerned about it. And now maybe you're actually in fear. Like, oh my gosh, I hope that doesn't happen to me. Well, by putting that much thought into something, that has now become a point of attraction for you. And so chances are very likely that you are going to attract something of that nature.
Mm.
Now, if you just put a little bit of thought into it and you didn't have a whole lot of emotional resonance with it, you were like, yeah, I know it happens, but, you know, I'm not really worried about it. And if you're really not really worried about it, then you're probably not going to manifest anything of that nature, because that really wasn't the point of attraction for you. You didn't put enough emphasis on it. There wasn't enough intensity. And so you weren't really broadcasting that to the universe. But I know, like, my grandmother, I remember she was very superstitious. And so she was the one I told you that, you know, when an airplane crashed, she would say, oh, 2 more are coming.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I remember that. Yeah,
she had this belief that all plane crashes happened in threes.
Right.
And so she would just, she'd be looking for them.
Of course.
She'd be scouring the newspaper for them. She'd be scouring the news of the 10 o'clock news every night for them. And so she was really creating, you know, quite a stir. Now, fortunately, that wasn't, you couldn't really know for certain if her energy of focus is what created the next crash whenever it did happen. But she would do that in our family house as well. So, like, here's another bizarre superstition. You can never have 13 people eating at the same dinner table, or one of the people at the table will die within the next year.
Yeah, I always wondered about that one. I mean,
who comes up with this stuff?
Exactly. Well, not just that. Whoever tracked it?
Well, I'm thinking somewhere in time, there was somebody who died. And as the people talked about the death, they're like, you know, he was at Thanksgiving with us. And then someone, you know, there were 13 of us that day. I'll bet it's because 13's an unlucky number. So in our family, and this really did happen. So there were some years we'd have 13 people. And my aunt, she would not eat at the main dining table. She'd go eat in the kitchen just to make sure nobody would die that year, because only 12 then would be at the big table.
Oh,
yeah. Now, I truly believe if you put enough thought, I mean, my aunt and my Nana, oh my gosh, they so believe this to be true, that that's why they did these silly things like isolating somebody in the kitchen. But they felt like that was how they kept the family safe.
Okay.
Well, the thing is,
if you believe it, it's true. That's the thing that kind of rattles me. If you believe it, it's true. So in a sense, they were keeping the family safe.
Exactly. And, you know, I grew up with these bizarre superstitions because this is what I had heard. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how the energy of the superstition was something that I put a lot of attention on.
Mm.
Even though I thought they seemed wacky, I mean, the people who are older than me, who are supposed to know more than me, believed in it. So I'm like, I guess I'm supposed to believe in it too. But what it did, and here's something that came into my world as a result of these wacky superstitions. I became superstitious about a lot of things. And I think that's, in other words, my point of attraction was, I'm focusing on a superstition.
Hmm. Okay.
And then other things in my life that had similar qualities, I'd go, oh, ooh, this feels superstitious too. And so I had a lot of superstitions in my life that I've been having to like take apart one at a time and go, this is not true. This is not true. This is an old wives' tale. Or where did I get the evidence for this one? I don't know. I made it up. Okay. You can let that one go too.
Yeah. I think we've all done that. I paid particular attention when I was younger to doing that. Although there was one that still sits in the back of my subconscious mind and appears every once in a while. It's probably one that young kids today don't even know about. They probably never heard of this. But when I was young, when I was really young, there was a little superstition that went around as a rhyme. Step on a crack and you break your mother's back.
That's exactly the one I was thinking of.
Were you thinking of that one too? Yeah, okay. Yep. So you would, you know, fearfully make sure you never stepped on a crack in the sidewalk, you know, for fear you'd break your mother's back. Well, I can tell you that I have either unintentionally or even sometimes intentionally, just to prove it's wrong, you know, stepped on so many cracks in my life that if that were actually true, my mother's back would be broken in about 500 places. And it's never broken. But nevertheless,
you know, well,
to this day...
I did the exact same thing.
Did you really?
Yep. I'm like, there's a crack. I'm stepping on that one. There's a crack. I'm stepping on that one.
Just to prove that it didn't work. And yet to this day, I will be out on one of my walks and I'll look down and I'll see a crack on the sidewalk and there's that little thing that says, don't step on the crack. I'm thinking, what the heck? I mean, I disproved this thing years ago. Why does this keep showing up? It's just amazing. And I don't really have a good answer for that one. I mean, I guess it keeps showing up because I keep focusing on it, but I don't even know why it keeps showing up.
Because that's the answer to that one.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
When you take your attention so completely off of it, you'll stop thinking about it.
The funny thing is, I thought I had. There was one particular period of time in my 30s especially where I just paid no attention to it, and then it just came back. I said, how did it come back? I don't understand. Oh, well. Fortunately, I don't give it any emotional energy, so it never gets anywhere anyway, but it's just kind of there. So anyway, continuing with the book, it says, if you want it... Oh, I'm sorry. Did you have something?
There was one other point that we didn't really cover, because I think this is interesting.
Oh, sure.
Let's see. So they talk about the second part of the equation is the expectation and the belief in something.
Mm-hmm.
So the first part of the equation is just focusing your thought on it.
Right.
And so I think they're making a point that there are two parts of the equation that determine whether something is actually going to manifest in our lives or not. First, you give thought to it. But then if you actually have a belief in it or an expectation that it's going to occur, now you've like completed the equation. So in other words, like in the story of being at a family event and I'm listening to some stories as people are talking about all these negative things. If people are just talking about them, but they don't really give any credence to it, they don't really believe it, then it's not something that you're really bringing into your life. You just spent some time on a negative conversation.
And that's an important point. That's a really important point. I know you want to get to the second one, but that first one's a very important point. If you don't give any real attention to it, any real belief in it, you aren't doing yourself any harm. You're not like doing yourself any good,
but
you're not doing
any harm. Because I know sometimes, I'm going to use the word again, sometimes there's a superstition for newbies when they come into law of attraction. Oh my God, I'm thinking a negative thought. You know, whatever I'm thinking is now going to happen. No, that's not true. It's only true if you complete the equation. Giving thought to something, you know, is not that big of a deal. But if you give thought to it with intensity because you believe it's going to occur, now you've like completed the circuit. And yeah, now you're broadcasting a signal that says, bring it on. Whatever this negative thing is, bring it on. Because I'm believing it. So much so, I expect it to happen. Or if I feel like I have a superstition, that is an expectation.
I was just remembering when you were describing that so well, that back when I first became aware of the law of attraction and became aware of how many negative thoughts I had the same kind of alarm. The idea, oh my God, there's so many of them. I can't have those. They're going to kill me. They're going to destroy my life and so forth. And one of the things that I did, because I didn't understand that you had to put the belief and the intensity into it in order to really activate them and to really focus on them for a long period of time in order to activate them. So I just thought I had to beat them off. And I actually turned that into a little joke in my mind. I would mentally beat them off with a stick. So, okay, time to get the stick. We got to beat these negative thoughts.
Well, and you know, it's like even when I'm talking to a client, sometimes they're so desirous of wanting to be positive because I think, okay, I'm going to say this in a bizarre way. I think there's a false illusion that in order to be a deliberate creator, you can never say anything negative. You have to be positive all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, that's not even possible.
No.
Second, we did not come onto planet Earth to live only positive experiences. We came purposefully to mix it up, get messy, get into the contrast. Because without the contrast, we don't get to create any preferences.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get to create brand new things. So the messy and the contrast and the negative is actually essential to our survival as a species, as
True.
A planet. So part of the, what I think the false illusion is when people come into law of attraction teachings is that they just think they can't ever say anything negative. And why? Because either they think they're bad and they're doing it wrong, or two, because they think they're going to manifest every negative word that comes out of their mouth. So
yeah.
Where's the balance? Because I think that's what Abraham's talking about. There's
mm-hmm.
a balance here.
Yeah.
I believe, like when I'm talking with clients and I ask them questions, sometimes this might sound funny, but sometimes it's really hard to pull negative information out of them.
Sure.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, you came to me because you have a problem and you want it solved, but I don't know what the problem is because you won't say it. Well, I'm afraid to say anything negative.
Mm.
And I say, I promise. Even if you have to, just for this moment, just trust me, this is like a safe space where we're not going to, I promise you, we're not going to broadcast anything of a negative report that's going to bring anything more back to you than what you've already been broadcasting. Because I'm just asking you to relay some data, just some information. And yes, it may have a negative quality to it, but I'm not asking you to relive it in living color.
Yeah.
Just tell me something that happened. You know, I mean, what comes to the top of my head is, well, my husband yelled at me yesterday and it made me feel bad. Okay, that doesn't mean he's going to yell at you tomorrow and make you feel bad again just because you say the words. But if my client goes into fitful tears and goes into sobbing and is like, oh my God, I can't believe he did it again. And it's just really a huge emotional display. Yes, that's broadcasting that signal. Because that's an intensity. But if I just say, tell it to me in words, because I need to know what we're working on, it's okay. I mean, I can say all sorts of negative things without having almost no emotion whatsoever. And those things I'm not going to be creating. I'm not going to manifest because I'm not broadcasting it. Because the only thing that comes back into our world, the only thing the law of attraction can deliver to us are things that we have broadcast through intense emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Or emotion that we have thought of or that we have felt many, many, many times. It doesn't even have to be intense. If you just feel something often, habitually, that's something you're broadcasting.
It reminds me of a TV show. I actually mentioned this story before, but it's been quite some time, so I'll mention it again. There was a TV show, you probably have some awareness of it anyway, but I remember it fairly well. Back in the 1970s, it was called Hee Haw, and it basically had a lot of country music, and one of the segments, they had all of the main players get together for like this hoedown type scene, and they would all play this really fast-paced song, and they would all be singing it with happy, smiling faces, and it'd be very jovial. And the song would have the lyrics that said, gloom, despair, and agony on me, deep down depression, excessive misery. So you have these people singing this really happy song with these really sad lyrics. It was a hoot to watch it. But there's a perfect example. I mean, clearly the emotion did not match the words at all. So there was no way they were attracting it to themselves, and that's what made it funny, of course.
Well, and just like if somebody uses sarcasm, but they do it and laugh at the same time, just like comedians often do, that's not broadcasting a negative signal because the law of attraction doesn't hear our words. So you could use negative words and be laughing and really feel the laughter and the joy, and that's actually what you're broadcasting is more laughter and joy.
Yeah, that's true. There is one caveat I'd want to add to that. The caveat is if your sarcasm has to do with a person and that person is part of the scene and they're not taking it that way, then there is some harm being done, although it's because of the way they're taking it. But nevertheless, I think it's a signal that, you know, any time that we're going to be using sarcasm, we need to be a little bit sensitive to, you know, how the object of the joke is taking it. Because rule of thumb I always followed was if the person who the joke is on isn't laughing, then it really isn't all that funny.
So I was really only pointing it out from the person who is speaking it. Their words are not hurting them, and
they are
not broadcasting the signal of the actual words that they're speaking.
I agree.
Because when they're delivering it, they're doing it with a light heart and happiness and joy. And so for them,
you know,
they are not going to reap any negative benefit.
Exactly.
Every individual it's up to them as to what they feel in any given moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely true. I agree. So let's see, where are we? Did we read the second to last paragraph on this page? I can't remember if we got that far.
We are now at the part that says, if you want to.
We are, okay. Okay, so if you want it and expect it, it will be yours very soon. However, it is not often that you have achieved a balance where your wanting and your expecting are equal. Sometimes your wanting is very high, but your belief is not there at all. For example, in the story of the mother whose child is trapped beneath the automobile, she does not believe that she can lift that heavy vehicle off her child, but her wanting is so extreme that she does it. On the other hand, there are many examples where your belief is high, but your wanting is not. The creation of an illness, such as cancer, is that sort of example, where your belief in it is very keen, while your wanting of it is not. That's another source of a lot of confusion, isn't it?
Okay, so wait, the creation of an illness, such as cancer, is a sort of example where your belief in it, so your belief in the cancer is very keen, while your wanting of it is not.
Right. You don't want the cancer, but you certainly believe in it. You believe that you've got it, and you believe that you're stuck in it.
Well, you know, it's interesting because a dear friend of mine was going through some physical, we'll call it a crisis because it was pretty extreme. And, you know, it's a girlfriend of mine, and she, you know, kind of operates the same way I do. So she's immediately going, so what about this? You know, what was my co-creation in this? What was I focusing on that brought it into my world? And my comment to her, and honestly, I don't think I've ever said this like this before, but this is what was kind of coming through me, meaning this is what I was receiving and then presenting to her, is I said, you didn't ask for this physical thing. You didn't do anything to purposely focus on having this physical ailment. The physical ailment is simply an indicator that the thinking that you have had on some issue, and that's the thing we have to figure out, has been in a way that it has been resistance. And we don't know what that's about, but nobody ever plans for physical illness. Nobody plans for cancer. No. Nobody focuses on it. I mean, now granted, I will say, if you've had plenty of people in your life die of heart disease, you may be very focused on heart disease. And yes, then in that sense, you could actually be the attractor of heart disease.
Yes.
Because if you're specifically focused on that illness or condition, yeah, you can actually bring it to yourself. But most people, when they have a heart attack or get cancer or, you know, have some condition come upon them, most of the time it's not because they focused on that condition and that's why they're experiencing it. Instead, they had been focusing on other things. There had been negative emotion when they were having the thoughts, but they never addressed the negative emotion. And when you let a negative emotion fester for a length of time without ever addressing it, eventually it gets into the cells of our body. And what I think is really ironic and so kind of synchronistically cool, if you can say that, is that whatever part of your body gets affected, there is a metaphoric, symbolic connection to what the thought was. So for an example, knees represent moving forward. Notice knees do not bend backwards.
Yes.
As in, like, you can't bend your knees backwards to walk backwards. It's like there's always a forward motion with your knees. So knees have to do with moving forward in life. And so if, let's say, somebody is just really dealing with some issues around what to do moving forward, or I'm not happy at my job, but I really want a new one and I don't know what to do, or, you know, should I stay in this marriage? Should I not stay in this marriage? And if they just feel like their life is somehow not able to get traction moving forward, and every time they think that, they have negative thoughts because they're so uncomfortable and their inability to know how to make a decision to move forward, it is possible that they could end up with, let's say, knee ailments. It doesn't have to be knees, but that's one something. That's something I've worked with, you know, when I've done sessions with clients. It's like, okay, you have something going on with your teeth. Like, you have a lot of teeth issues. Well, teeth actually represent making decisions. Actually, Louise Hay, in her book, You Can Heal Your Life, the whole second half of the book is almost like a chart where you can look up almost any ailment and it will tell you, like, you can look up the part of the body that's being affected.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it will tell you what the emotional and spiritual cause is, and even the affirmation you can begin to say and focus on in order to, you know, change that condition. And so I've been like this is something I've known for like at least 20 plus years. And I have yet to find where if something lodged in my body, whether it was condition, disease, you know, skin rash, whatever, that it wasn't metaphoric for something going on in my life that I had never either looked at or understood how to even have the awareness of it. But when I start poking around, eventually I find it. And when I find whatever that thought is that I hadn't really looked at before, and then when I find a new way to, a new perception, the physical ailment goes away. Mm. It has to. Because it's just like a check engine light on your car. When the check engine light comes on, it's saying, hey, there's something going on in the engine that needs to be looked at. When you take the car to the mechanic and he goes, oh, yeah, you need new sparks, condenser, blah, blah, blah. And you go, okay, fix it. You get the car back and now it's running like a top. Guess what? The check engine light's not on anymore.
That's true.
It was only there to send a message. So unless somebody is purposely focusing on, you know, a disease, we don't end up with those diseases because we asked for them. It's actually an indicator of something else. And so, you know, I totally get it, you know, where Abraham is saying at the very end here, the creation of an illness such as cancer is that sort of an example where your belief in it is very keen. Like, yeah, I'm feeling pretty bad right now. And your wanting is like, no, I don't want this thing. And I guess the little distinction I'm wanting to bring out here is that if you stay focused on the ailment in the body, you're actually focusing on the wrong thing. Look for the energetic vibration that is what created that in the body. There are always thoughts that will match up to that ailment in the body. And when you find the thought, and you reframe the thought, change the thought, no longer have that thought, whatever's going on in the body has to go away. Because it was only a message, it was only the indicator. And once you take care of what the message was about and you rectify it, the indicating message goes away.
Yeah, that whole thing about Louise Hay and her diseases and the body's aches and pains and so forth as metaphors for what's going on in your life was certainly groundbreaking in some ways. There was also a predecessor book to it, and I've often wondered about this. I never brought it up before with any of the co-hosts, but I thought I'd mention it to you just to see if you had a take on it. There's a book that came out, I want to say, in the late 1970s by a woman named Susan Sontag, and I believe it was called Illness as a Metaphor. And her take on it was not metaphysical in the same sense that Louise Hay's take was on it. Her take on it was that there are historical trends, and I'm kind of doing this from memory, so I may get this not right. But for instance, there are, like in the 19th century, tuberculosis was like the disease of the century. And in the 20th century, it was cancer and so forth. And she observed that because of how predominant these diseases were in their times, they actively led to more and more people suffering the symptoms of them. But she also argued that it doesn't do any good to tell people to change the way they're thinking about their symptoms because what they really need is treatment, which is not at all what Louise Hay was saying. And I, you know, so I just wanted to see what your take was on that, because, I mean, clearly she had the same concept and she came up with it before Louise Hay did. But her take was completely different.
I guess I'm thinking that her main point might have been different, but I see some similarities in them.
Yeah.
No, I'm not familiar with the book, so I'm only going by what you just told me.
Yeah. And I could be remembering it wrong. I mean, it's not a book I read. I remember reading about it. I remember, you know, some you know, discussions and so forth about it. But it's like, it was from a while ago, so I could
be
getting it wrong.
You know, I've watched some historical things on Discovery Channel and whatnot, and things specifically having to do with different time periods that were, you know, highly impacted by certain diseases and illnesses and the plague and, you know, tuberculosis and the kinds of things you're talking about. And, of course, they were saying, you know, like, I can't remember what illness, it was something that was waterborne. Because all the people that were going to the same water source were ending up with the same disease. And the people who didn't die weren't getting water from that same water source. And so they were saying they just needed to change where they were getting their water.
Mm-hmm.
But what they didn't talk about in much detail was there were some people that were getting water from the water source that was causing a lot of people to die, and some of them didn't.
Mm.
So you can't make a really blanket statement in all cases, like, you know, this author you're talking about is saying they just need a treatment. I still believe, even though I know this sometimes seems hard-pressed to really comprehend, especially for those who are new to Law of Attraction, that people's thoughts absolutely create their life circumstances. It is very possible that you could have 100 people in a room and one person starts coughing all over the place, and the next thing you know, other people start getting sick. But it's possible that not everyone gets sick.
Mm-hmm.
And so if these people are all quarantined together, I'm making up this story,
sure,
they're quarantined together and the majority of them are sick and some of them are not, the difference is something we can't see with the physical eye.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know that we have medical instruments to detect this, but I believe that the thoughts that we think regarding what's going on, or just the thoughts that we think in general, absolutely influence what happens in our life and in our circumstances. And so, I mean, there have been times I worked in offices where practically everyone was sick and there was always almost nobody left in the office building because so many people were staying home sick.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I was healthy and I never even had a sniffle.
Yeah.
And, yeah. I was standing next to the people that were sneezing and coughing all over me. And I did not go and run into a bathroom and wash my hands or use Purell. I just stayed healthy because I was very cognizant of what I was thinking, which this may sound, here it is. I wasn't thinking about the sickness. I wasn't even thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My thought was not on the sickness. My thought was, I got work to do and I'm going to do it. Other people's conversation was, and we've all heard this, oh yeah, it's that thing that's going around.
It's going around, right, yeah.
I have never in my entire life, before Law of Attraction even, ever bought into that concept. Now, it doesn't mean I've never been sick. Obviously, I have. I had a doozy of a cold during this show broadcast a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't come from the office because I work at home.
That's true. Very true.
But when I worked in offices, very rarely did I ever get sick when the majority of people did. And yet at least twice a year, there would be the epidemic of, well, that's what's going around. Or the best one is, well, you know, it's flu season.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, here's the funny thing about when people say, you know, it's flu season. Do you know how many people get just a common cold and they don't really get the flu, but yet they say, well, yeah, the flu's going around. And when you don't get the flu, they still think you got sick because it's flu season.
Oh, sure.
That doesn't even make logical sense to me.
But it's common. It's a very
because
common thing.
The common cold is a completely different strain than the flu.
Oh, yeah.
They're like two different things. So truly, whatever you choose to believe on or in is what you attract. And in the case of the sickness, I just don't even put my attention there. I'm not even putting my attention on, I'm strong, I'm healthy, my body can, you know, combat anything. If I did that, I'm actually focused on illness.
As you talked about I was thinking that there is a very interesting commonality between the language of the Law of Attraction and the language of healthcare. And that commonality is the term resistance. They're used in different ways, but it's the same term. And it just made me wonder how similar and how different are the ways that they're used. So, for instance, if you're talking with a doctor about the flu, right, the doctor will tell you, well, among other things, different people have different levels of resistance. And by that, he means that their antibodies and their white blood cells and so forth are either in a better place or not so good place to fight off invaders. That's what the medical community thinks of as resistance. Whereas in the law of attraction community, we think of resistance in terms of whether or not we are resisting something that we're trying to attract to ourselves. So the concept is different, and yet I'm struck that there's a similarity to them. The similarity, well, at least one form of similarity that I see, is that when you have resistance to a disease, you are in effect in a state where you are not effectively completing the transaction of attracting that disease to you. So in that sense, there's a similar role. I just wondered what you might think about that.
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I agree. I wasn't comparing those two. I wasn't thinking about them, so I'm not quite sure what to do with that.
I'm not really either. It just occurred to me that that's something at least worth briefly exploring. Maybe there is no comparison to be made, but I thought I'd throw it to see if anything flies.
In the human body, I'll think of this through the lens of law of attraction. In the human body, if we've ever been sick before, or we've had invader viruses or bugs or whatnot, we know that our body creates antibodies to kill those off in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, that's what the doctor is saying. We have resistance because we have antibodies.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, antibodies are like our little soldiers keeping us safe. So, yes, we have that. From a law of attraction perspective, I guess I would think in terms of if I'm not focused on anything, how do I say this? I'm going to say it this way. Unless an illness is going to end up being an indicator, it's not going to an illness is not going to show up. If you have nothing going on in your body because there's no area that you are resisting in law of attraction terms, you're not pushing against anything, it's just not going to show up in your body.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. The other thing that occurred to me as you were saying that is that research scientists tell us that most of us carry around most of the germs, the bugs, so to speak, in our body all the time, but they aren't able to gain a foothold because our antibodies are constantly killing them off. So, you know, from our perspective, we just never get sick, and yet they're already there. They're already present.
I mean, I've heard it said by many medical persons that we have cancer cells in our body all the time.
Oh, yeah. Our body is constantly removing cancer cells.
So the reason a person gets cancer, the diagnosis of cancer, is because their body has no longer has the defensive ability to keep it from happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As in a full-time disease, you know, because cancer cells start winning over healthy cells.
Which raises
but
a
I
whole
also
new idea about
believe
resistance.
A person cannot get cancer. I know this is a bold statement, but a person cannot get cancer unless they have been feeling negative feelings on some issue that they have not addressed. Because the cancer is an indicator, just like the check engine light, it's an indicator of thoughts and of feelings that have gone unheeded, unchecked, unlooked at, unreviewed, unevaluated. They've just not been paid attention to. And it doesn't even mean the person deliberately denies them. They just may be completely unaware as to what you do with negative emotions. If they've never been schooled in negative emotions are actually messengers, or if, like me, they were told always deny your feelings, don't ever pay attention to them because they can't be trusted. It's like the messengers have been saying, hello, hello, cancer approaching, and you can't read that sign because you don't read that language. So
yeah.
Cancer doesn't, quote, just show up.
Yeah, that's true.
And I even believe, like, people will say, like, you know, when you fill out a medical profile, they want to know what your history is. And has anybody in your family had this, and this? And I would say, when people say, well, it's in my family line, it's genetic. Well, you know, there are enough tests and studies now that genes can be changed. Genes do not have to express the same way just because you're part of a family line.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Your thinking can actually change how your genetics are expressed. So So if every member of your family had a disease, it doesn't mean you're destined to have it too. Unless you think similar thoughts to them, unless you buy into the vibrational countenance of what they're offering.
And that's actually what it says at the end of this section that we've been reading. The last paragraph says, many of you find yourselves in what we would term a negative workshop many times a day. As you are sitting at your desk with your stack of bills beside you, feeling tension or even fear because there is not enough money to pay them, you are in a negative workshop. For as you sit there giving thought to not having enough money, you are in the perfect position for the creating of more of what you do not want. The way you are feeling about that is the signal from your inner being saying that what you are thinking is not in harmony with what you want. Well, you're talking about the same thing with regard to health. Exactly the same thing. If you're staying in that negative space, you are attracting. And isn't it amazing too? We stay in that negative space very often by denying that the feelings are there. When we just don't, we just pretend they're not there. We say, okay, I'm not going to feel negative feelings.
So, okay, hold on a sec.
Oh, sure. I didn't mean to get you all choked up there.
Right. So, I mentioned about a month or so ago that I had had a mole removed. And this is a cosmetic thing. It's a mole that I've had at least as far as I know since I was a child. I'm assuming I was born with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I go into this dermatology office and I have to fill out the medical paperwork.
Right.
And it's like what I want to say to them is, I promise you, and I know they can't do this legally, I just want to have a mole removed. It's really all okay.
Yeah, right.
I don't have cancer. But I have to say whether I've had diabetes or cancer or, you know, any of these conditions in myself or in anybody else in my life. And, you know, I'm really healthy. And so it's like, no. But every time I go to a physician's office for something elective, like having a mole removed, I feel as though I become somewhat vulnerable to taking on concerns that I didn't walk in the door with. Because just by having to ask the question, or by answering the question, has anyone in your family had any of the following things? You know, well, yeah, this family member did have this problem. This family member did have this problem. And I know that I do understand. I'm not stupid. I do understand that that's part of how they get their data, because it could be helpful in your situation. I just happen to know that the fact that my grandfather died of an aneurysm has no effect on me whatsoever. I know it doesn't. I'm not thinking the thoughts that would have led to that. I know someone else in my family died with Parkinson's disease. I know that is not going to affect anything that's going on with me having a mole removed, let alone anything else, because I don't focus on those things. And I so don't focus on them that that's why I feel a little bit uncomfortable when I'm being asked, has anybody in your family had these illnesses? It's like, that's not where I want to place my focus.
Mm-hmm.
And trust me, I'm not trying to make light of the medical community and the rules and even the diagnosis things, because I understand the purpose of it. I'm just saying, for me, that's something that I have to be prepared for as I'm reading this questionnaire. I am constantly saying to myself, they're asking these for very valid reasons for what they do, but this does not have to affect me in any way, shape, or form, and it doesn't. And so what I do is I'm constantly reminding myself when I'm filling out the questionnaire, I am so incredibly healthy. They must be looking for people who must be on all sorts of kinds of drugs and medications. And because it says, what drugs and medications on you're on?
That's right.
Are you on? And I say, none.
None.
You know, and they look at me and they go, but you're as old as you are. You should at least be on the blah, 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 blah. I'm like, none. Wow.
Mm. Yeah, it can be mind blowing for the medical profession. I'm happy to say that I haven't blown many minds lately, but that's just because I don't spend a lot of time with medical professionals. So that's a topic for another day. Anyway, we're out of time, but this has been great, and I look forward to doing it again tomorrow as usual. By the way, for someone who wants to reach you, how do they reach you, Wendy?
WendyDillard.com.
There it is, folks. Hope to take advantage of it. Wendy, we'll see you tomorrow.
You got it.
All right. We'll see you all as well next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye now.